Well, let's continue our conversation about the asylum seekers and meet three of the writers who've contributed stories and essays to that collection, which is A Country Too Far. With me are Rodney Hall, Arnold Zabel and Robin de Crepney. Welcome to all three of you. Nice to have you here at the program.
Hi, Michael. Michael.
Oh, yes, they answered in chorus. How nice that was. Arnold, let's start with you. Your piece in the anthology is called Zara's Lullaby, which introduces us to Faris Jahani.
Jahani, yes.
Who's a real person. Tell us about him.
Well, Faris was one of the survivors of the CivX tragedy, where 353 men, women and children drowned en route to Australia on October 19, 2001. And I met him about a year later.
So CivX, just to recap, was the official name given to this boat that sank.
It was an unnamed fishing boat that should never have had 421 people on board, as it had when it left Indonesia. And he was one of the 45 survivors worldwide, and seven who came to live in Australia, and one of the three that came to live in Melbourne. And we became and remain good friends. And I visit him on a fairly regular basis. Occasionally I've written stories about him, but every time I visit him, apart from receiving incredible hospitality, he's a very warm-hearted person, a very welcoming person. Apart from that, I always learn something new about him, and something more extraordinary about that event and about him.
So he's a Kurd, just to get some of his background, he's a Kurd. His family were from Iraq, is that right?
Well, originally his grandparents were from Iran. There's a whole story of a particular group of Kurds who left Iran for Iraq in search of a better life a number of generations ago.
Right.
And they became a specific group of Iraqi Kurds who did quite well in Iraq, quite a few of them, set up businesses, got employment, but they had two black marks against them under the regime of Saddam Hussein. One was that they were Kurds, and the other one was that they were Shia. So there came a point in the early 1980s when they were basically rounded up. He was a 12-year-old boy in school when the teacher came in with the police, and the police said, "This is it," and he never returned home again, and he was deported to the Iranian border, and they were just left off there, and he remained stateless for the next 27 years.
Mm. And ends up on this boat. So tell us the story, just briefly, behind. It's a lovely title, Zara's Lullaby. What's the story behind that title?
Oh, well, look, it's extraordinary. Primo Levi has a term, the aliquot episode, and this is a terrifying aliquot episode. I mean, I'd known him for 8 years already, 9 years, when I was visiting, and he's remarried a wonderful woman, Majida, who has a similar background and came on the boats in the year 2000. And she said... she said, he sings a lullaby. I hear him singing a lullaby to his daughter. He lost his wife and his 7-year-old daughter to the sea. They just vanished from his grasp and disappeared.
In the sinking.
Yeah, in the sinking. And she said she hears him singing this Arabic lullaby to his daughter Zara in his sleep as a kind of recurring dream or whatever. And she knew the lullaby off by heart. And so, of course, a story like that just grips you as a human being, let alone as a writer. And so I wrote a piece originally for The Age, a much shorter piece with his permission. I should say that whenever I write about an asylum seeker like Faris, I show them what I write. And usually he actually... contributes more stories when I do that. But he was very, very, he was quite elated to have that story told, actually, and to see his daughter's photo in The Age. And then when I was approached to write for this anthology, I thought I'd expand that piece and make that my contribution.
Faris describes how when the boat went down, three other ships, one small and two large, came within view of the survivors. And this is a story that several people who survived that have told. And they don't understand why those boats then went away, and there are various theories about who those boats were. I guess it's is making a sense of what those boats were up to. Is that the hardest part of the story? Why these boats would come and then apparently...
Oh, yeah. I mean, that plagues him. To this day, it plagues him. He says, why, my brother? Why? I can't understand this. And he wants to get to the bottom of it.
I mean, the descriptions is there were boats there. There were searchlights on the water. They were clearly seen. And then the boats left.
That's right. And this is a story that... all survivors that I know tell, and it happened.
I've heard people reject this and say, oh, it's an hallucination. People see all sorts of things when they've been in the water.
Oh, no, it's not an hallucination. Everyone saw it. I mean, they saw the searchlights. They began paddling towards the boats, and then the boats disappeared, and it remains a mystery to this day. And it tortures him, and it tortures his fellow survivors. I mean, there have been from time to time talk of having a proper investigation, but it always peters out. Mm. He's still driven by the need to get into this.
Well, that's one of the stories. Arnold Zabel's told that story. Now, Rodney Hall, your short story is called Moonlight, and it's a portrayal of a man, a husband, at a very specific moment on a voyage to Australia. What's left of his family are travelling with him.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I suppose what I wanted to do, Michael, is in a way very distinct from what Arnold's done, is I wanted to strip it of all kind of news element, of all the sort of factual elements. So the reader doesn't hear where this refugee has come from or what the background is, except that his two daughters have been shot. I wanted to get to the stage where I'm appealing to the reader's imagination to actually be in one moment in one man's life.
So this is using fiction as a kind of way of empathising.
Yes, exactly, Michael. Because I think the thing that the public... The great failure of us, the Australian public, is to imagine what it is we're doing to these people. When Tom says it's a disgrace, it is an absolute disgrace. Unbearable to think about. These people are incarcerated and treated as criminals, and they're desperate. And we try and solve that by saying they're queue jumping or they're economic refugees or whatever. Nobody does this if they're not in extremity. And so I wanted to put my reader, I've only got a short story to work with, so I've only got room for one extended moment, really. And it's about a man who is on a boat, and he's at night, and they're out at sea, and his wife is with him, and their surviving son, because the two daughters have been shot. And it's his responsibility for them, and he's marveling at being in the most beautiful thing he's ever seen in his life, which is the ocean that is absolutely covered with a dazzle of moonlight. And as the boat's chugging along, and there's a boy down in the engine room every time the motor hiccups, who tinkers with it and gets it going again. So that's this sort of sound, and that's the fault line. The fault starts right at the beginning of the story. So, and it's just to do with the moment when all the probabilities have been that this is the last leg and this peaceful ocean at night is in fact the beginning of the new life that they're, and they are in such injury, psychological injury, physical injury, and the desperate journey. I mean, you know, you think, I want the public to think, if somebody comes from, say, Afghanistan, I'm not saying that that's where my refugee comes from, but you know, if you go to that part of the world, it is landlocked and it's brutal, it's harsh, and it's the sort of land that prophets come from. And the idea of crossing those mountains, and I've done some of this in sub-Saharan Africa with roadblocks, it's terrifying. If you're traveling in a country that's under revolution and you're being stopped with armed men at roadblocks that are set up from old 44-gallon cans and felled trees and things, and it's all improvised, and they're all trigger happy, and they're hungry and angry. These people have been through these desperate situations before they get to the boat, and that's what my man on his peaceful boat is thinking. This is bliss. This is, we've come through this, and we are, the remnants of us are safe.
This is Books and Arts Daily on RN, and we're talking about A Country Too Far, which is a group of very distinguished Australian writers writing about asylum seekers. And We're talking to Arnold Zabel, and you've just heard there from Rodney Hall. Also with us is Robin de Crepney. And Robin, an excerpt of your novel is part of this book. Your novel is called The People Smuggler, The True Story of Ali al-Janabi. So tell us who he is.
Well, it's actually not a novel. It is a true story. So it's more of a biography, which I've chosen to write in the first person because it did give that opportunity for the reader to really empathise and identify with Ali's story. Once again, the same as both Arnold and Rodney are talking about, how the anthology, its purpose was to try and humanise, put a human face to these people.
Well, what you've done is try to put a human face to someone called a people smuggler. And in the new discourse about asylum seekers, they're the most vilified people in this story. I mean, in the political discussion, you know, the people smuggler is the worst of the worst. Robin, have we still got you there? I think we've just lost Robin de Crepney. Can't hear her there.
Oh, we lost it. Her story is astonishing for that reason, isn't it? Really, really. I was so moved by that story. I thought, you know, as you say, the demonising of the people smugglers. Who are they, and what do they do? They're not all the same thing.
So, go on.
Yes, well, I mean, when people escape, and I know this from the Jewish survivors I grew up with, when people escape and cross borders, they almost invariably go to someone who knows how to show them the way. And so when you talk about people smugglers, they range. At one extreme, you have the great altruists like Sugihara, the Japanese consul in Lithuania, who saved the lives of thousands of Jews by giving them visas, just stamping their visas at his own cost, all the way through to the criminal syndicates. You can't deny that. That's on the other extreme.
I mean, there clearly are people who exploit human misery.
Yeah. Oh, no,
but it's a vast spectrum in between. Yeah. But the issue is, that's what you do. If you escape, you are desperate, you go to whoever you can to show the way. You're an idiot to try and attempt it on your own. And what, I mean, there are cases where a whole village will save up money for one person to make a run for it. And this is historical. This goes back centuries. This is how it's always been. If you look at Elia Kazan's extraordinary film, America, America, of a young boy leaving for the Golden Land a century ago, you have a similar story of going to people smugglers, being exploited, sometimes meeting altruistic people.
Yes, and this one, in Robin's case, what is so moving about it is this guy, this people smuggler, is suspect all the way through, but he turns out to have, with great ingenuity and spontaneity and courage, he bypasses all the danger spots. And the refugees don't know. They think that maybe he's double-crossed them, or maybe they're going to get caught or whatever. But it always turns out in a kind of really amusing, as it were, casual, with an amusing casualness, that he's actually thought of all that and he's actually looking after them. And that there's something I thought it was important, because I haven't heard that. I take Arnold's point, you know, there are, and yours, that there are the two extremes. But this is, I thought, a very important thing that Robin does in this story.
We've got Robin back. Briefly, Robin, we've only got 2 minutes left, but Miller asks this question in the book: why don't we feel betrayed and shamed as Australians and as human beings by the cruel and inhuman treatment our government is meting out to refugees? What do you imagine is the story to that? How has the mood of the country changed in this way?
It's a mystery to me, but I think that there's a certain political advantage which the politicians recognised after the Tampa and the Children Overboard incident, where it facilitated the change of government. And so it's become a very effective political tool, and it has been very easy to generate fear and inflame that fire in the community by the language they're using, with, as we said, you know, illegals and queue jumpers and terrorists and whatever, and by generating that fear and keeping it going, and not allowing people to hear the other side, which of course is what we're all trying to do in A Country Too Far and in The People Smuggler, is to somehow get people to snap out of it and take on the reality of us being an incredibly wealthy country where we have, we are a compassionate people at heart, and we've got a convince our politicians by our votes, I guess. I'm not sure how we do this, but I know that there is a big kind of movement of people happening now that are saying, not in our name, we're ashamed of what is happening here. And eventually, hopefully, we will break through. It is shameful. Overseas, we're being called a cruel and frightened people, and frankly, that's the way we are behaving, or that's the way our politicians are behaving. But I think these stories, and I have such admiration for all these amazing writers who have contributed this wonderful different perspectives and putting a human face on these people, because I think that's the only way. As somebody said earlier, that so many people have never even met someone that is an asylum seeker.
Well, Robin, we do
and
have
once
to
you get them to do that, then they begin to feel the compassion that we are hoping for.
We do have to stop there. Robin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
And thank you to Arnold Zabel and Rodney Hall.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you with us. They're contributors to A Country Too Far, along with, Judith Rodriguez, Anna Funder, Fiona McGregor, lots of great names, Judith Wright, Elliot Perlman. A Country Too Far, it's published by Penguin. Across Australia, this is Books and Arts Daily. You're on RN.